This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made.
Me, oh,
Tuesday and Wednesday night from 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Time. And our website is thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can listen to our archives of our past and present guests. We're excited to have with us Kathy Nijmi tonight. I know most of you will never forget her wonderful part of Sister Mary Patrick in the movie Sister Act 1 and Sister Act 2. She is a multi-talented actress, and her career spans Hollywood, Broadway, cartoon, comedy circuits, modeling, and on and on. Hi, Kathy, and welcome back to The People Speak.
Thank you, honey. I was most excited that you added modeling in there. Wow, that's fantastic. Oh, I actually have modeled. I modeled lingerie for Lane Bryant about 6 years ago in Bryant Park, New York, and then the other night I got to do the St. Jude's fundraiser in Hollywood. They had different celebrities and fancy people walk the runway, and I got to be a model for a night. Who'd have thunk?
Well, I'll tell you, you look wonderful. Your photographs and your pictures, and I've seen some of your stuff on YouTube. You've lost a tremendous amount of weight. Congratulations on that. I know that's a feat in and of itself, and coupled with your incredible career, that's great. Kathy, have you got any new projects on the move right now? I mean, and your life seems so busy.
I don't know if last time we spoke I got you up to date, but I'm still on King of the Hill. It's been on for 13 seasons, and
yes.
I need you to reach over and knock any wood that's in your reach.
Knocking.
Thank you. Whatever, throw salt, cross yourself, whatever, cross your fingers, black cat, whatever it is, it'll give me good luck. So 13 years of on Peggy Hill, on King of the Hill, which is just such a blessing. I love the material, the writing, the other actors, and, you know, I'm a complainer, and I really I love this job. So there's King of the Hill, and what else am I doing? Oh, I was just on a TV show called Privileged. It's an hour drama, and it's right after 90210, and it's one of those shows with really cute, thin young people. And if you look for me, I'm not. I'm the other one.
Well, you look great to me, I'll tell you that.
Thank you. But that was fun. And, you know, I do a lot of keynote speaking, and that I really, really love. I travel around. In fact, I was in Detroit twice last year speaking and had the best Arabic food I've ever had other than my mother's.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we've got some really great stuff in Dearborn, I'll tell you that.
The best. In fact, and I don't know if I told you this, I think I did, but when I got married 11 years ago, I had the food for my wedding flown in overnight from Dearborn because it was the best Arabic food I'd ever tasted other than my
wedding. Did you really? I love that. How cool. That is what, which restaurants are you favoring so we can I'll make sure that I tell them I know most of the restaurateurs down there.
Okay, now there's one. It's like something express, and there's a lot of them around.
Midnight Express.
What is it?
Midnight Express.
No, I think it's someone's name, like an Arabic name of a man.
Hmm.
But I remember it was so funny because I was at a hotel and I was getting ready to speak. There was a knock on my door at the hotel room, and I opened up, and the whole hallway smelled like Arabic food. Someone had dropped off compliments. They had heard I was in town, but it was just me. But they had sent platters, like catering platters of food that I had to haul into my hotel room. And thank goodness I had hair and makeup people coming because between, like, the four of us, we ate all of it. It was really delicious. But it was so funny to open your door and have, like, tabbouleh and hummus
and the smell of garlic.
It's a whole hallway. It smelled like lamb and garlic.
That's wonderful. What a great, it sounds like Dearborn. We have a very generous group of people down in Dearborn. They're a lot of fun. We enjoy them, and we really love having, especially myself as an activist, we've often hosted certain people, some of the dignitaries from Palestine and here and there, and so when we take them down to the Dearborn restaurants, we've always had a wonderful, wonderful experience. The restaurateurs there are very thrilled to have these people and you, such as yourself, in the area, so it's a lot of fun for everybody when that happens. Thank you for toting the prowess of Dearborn. It is a rocking place. I love Dearborn.
Yeah, I had a great time. We went to the museum. I brought my daughter and my mother and my husband, and we just had the best time. It was so well done. Really great, like 4 hours at the Arab American Museum.
They do a lot of wonderful things there. As a matter of fact, they're starting their film festival real soon there. So, yeah, I'm looking for, I haven't been down to the museum probably in about 6 months just because of work and everything. And, you know, it's 20 minutes for me, but I mean, it's always a thrill to go down there. 13 years on King of the Hill. You know, when you started Peggy, did you have anybody in mind for the role? Did you kind of characterize her in your mind somehow as, or kind of, try to see her, someone else through her?
You know, it was an interesting audition. They had a drawing, a pencil drawing of Peggy on the wall, and they sort of told me about her. You know, she's the foundation of the family, and yet, like all of us, she's really flawed, which is so much more fun to play than some boring, balanced wife who's never does anything wrong, which doesn't exist, as we know. So I love that she was funny and flawed, yet thought of herself as pretty perfect. And she was, at the time, maybe going to be a Sunday school teacher, but they went away from that, and she became a Spanish teacher, which was such a great opportunity to do a really bad Spanish pronunciation. I was born and raised in San Diego, right on the border, so I spent my whole childhood hearing people destroy the beautiful Spanish language, so that was easy. So Mike Judge and Greg Daniels, the creator, looked not at me, but at the pencil drawing on the wall, and said, okay, go, and I just had to improv her talking. And I think what they responded to was that I had a fondness for her, and I tried not to make fun of her, like I know people like her, and she absolutely thinks she's right, no matter what, which is pretty interesting. It's much less boring than someone who doubts themselves, you know. It's just really fun to play. And I was really lucky. I mean, some really great actresses, I'm finding out now, auditioned for that part, and you're just sometimes standing at the right place at the right time.
Are you allowed to do the voice, like in an interview such as now, or is that something that, because I know once we interviewed the character that the gentleman that did SpongeBob, and he was not allowed to use the voice outside of the show. Is that something you're allowed to do?
I'll do it for you, since I was late getting on the phone. I will do it for you and $40.
Sweetheart.
Send me $40 in the mail.
Absolutely, it's in the mail.
She would say, "Yellow, this is Peggy Hill. Hank, that boy ain't right." And that's Peggy.
That's wonderful. Do a lot of people identify with you or recognize you as Peggy in Canada?
No. I mean, big sort of sycophant fans of the show know, but most people have no idea it's me. In fact, for the first 2 years, my friends swore that it wasn't me. And I would say, you guys, it's me. It's really me. I'm telling you. It's how I paid for that barbecue. I'm telling you, I have that job. But they would say, it doesn't sound like you. And I said, well, that's the point. But because my face isn't attached to my name, you know, it's a character. It's a cartoon character. I'm glad that people don't think of me when they watch Peggy. That's the point. So, no, I mostly get recognized. It depends what's playing on TV that week, you know, and it's usually Sister Act 1 or 2. Hocus Pocus is big around this time of year. The Kathy and Mo Show is a two-woman feminist play that I did for years and years and years and years and years and years, and that's more of an adult audience, political audience.
I have to admit, I have my hand up right here, Kathy. That happens to be one of my favorites.
Did you see it live on HBO?
Oh, my. No, I only saw it on HBO. I would have loved to see it live. How wonderful. I mean, I never laughed as hard as I do when I watch you two.
Thank you. So that's definitely a demographic, sort of a more mature political audience, New York and L.A., that's Kathy and Mo.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the youngsters that like a rat race. And, you know, and then I did numbers for a season, and that's really interesting, the demographic of that. If somebody comes up to me at a furniture store and says, oh, my gosh, I love you in numbers, I know they're a smart person, because only smart people can figure out that show.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the show, so I guess I must really be on the bottom of the totem pole there.
Believe me, I had never watched it either until I was on it. But it's a really interesting hour drama about sort of a genius savant mathematician who helps his brother who's in the FBI, and they solve cases by the matching between, you know, law and investigation and his math genius. And it's really, really well written. I had a great time. I played the head of the university, so I got to play a brilliant person, which, you know, how often do you get that?
Well, I can't imagine anybody that can do comedy. I think once I had written, because I do some writing, and my statement, somebody was talking about humor, and I said, life without humor is like bread without yeast.
Right.
For me, you know, it's just like, what's the point? You've got this hard concrete thing there, that, and you have to have that. And I think it takes a little bit of genius in order to do the kind of comedy that you do. Let me ask you something. Is it still fun being a comic? Obviously, there's a lot of work involved. And, you know, with that kind of work, does humor take a beating at your end? I mean, is it still enjoyable most of the time for you to be able to do the comedy? Or does it become tedious after a while?
I like comedy if it's really good writing, but I also, you know, in numbers, it wasn't a comic role. She was the head of the university, and this part that I'm playing on Privileged is, she's a publicist. I was on Chicago Hope as a manic depressive bipolar therapist. That was fabulous. So I think the reward is if it's well written and you get to deal with great people, great writers, directors, and especially actors. So to me, comedy drama doesn't matter so much as the part, how if the part is drawn three-dimensional and not one, and the people that you're working with. But I have to say, I love the humor of Kathy and Mo because I wrote it, and it's political, which I really love. And I also love a lot of the dramas that I have been doing lately as well. It's very fulfilling, you know. I don't try not to stick to one thing.
Mm-hmm. McCain or O'Biden? Are you going for the
McCain
or the O'Biden, Obama? Well, I call it O'Biden or McCain. How do you like all of this 2 years of campaigning that's been going around?
Well, to be honest, and it's really nothing that's a secret because I've been out there very actively. I've been campaigning for Hillary Clinton for the past 8 years. So I was very disappointed, not so much with her loss, but the way that it came about. I felt like the misogyny and sexism around the nomination and the feeling, especially in the media, the things that they how portrayed her, the things they were interested in about her, and just how rude and mean they were, just smacked of, you know, 1972 sexism to me. But so I'm disappointed that it's not Hillary. That being said, I think Barack Obama will make a fantastic president. I think we will be blessed and lucky, and I think he is open-minded, and he is for the things that I'm for, which is peace, freedom, tolerance, you know, choice, all of those things. So I'm definitely an Obama woman.
Now, we had touched on this a little bit the last time we were together, Kathy, and I was asking you about, first of all, is there a certain responsibility as a famous person to be active in some kind of a cause? I know that one that is close to your heart is AIDS. Do you find that you are asked to become something whether you want to or not, or is this an active choice that you make? And are you taking advantage of your position as a very notable figure to impress upon people these kinds of things that are happening in the world?
Well, that's a really good question, and I'm kind of the wrong person to ask only because I don't represent sort of like the average person in Hollywood. I was a political being long before I was an actress or a known person, so So for me, the thing that's most exciting and fulfilling for me is my political work. So I am an activist who became an actress rather than an actress who became an activist. So it's always been a part of my life. So there's never even been one blip, one moment, one second of questioning whether when I have the chance to speak, I'm going to speak about what I believe. And people have two schools of thought. Some people think, oh, just shut up and be an actress. And some people think, oh, because you get to have a mouthpiece for the media, you need to use it. Well, A, it's more important for me to be an activist. It's who I am in my blood more than an actress. I could never act again and be fine. But I could, I always have to work towards what I, you know, peace and freedom and liberation and equality. It's just in my bones, you know? So it's not a question for me. I don't wake up in the morning and decide. What I have done is take full advantage of any time someone asks me a question or puts a microphone in front of me, I say my truth. I figure if they're asking, they want the answer. So absolutely, I take every opportunity to say how I feel about issues that I'm passionate about.
Well, that's absolutely wonderful. And when you are, as an activist, as an Arab American in this country, do you find that that... I mean, I know for myself when I still remember the days after the Oklahoma bombing and Timothy McVeigh, and my very first thought in my mind was, well, God, please don't let it be an Arab that did this.
Right.
And it wasn't. And again, at 9/11, when that happened, oh, my God, please don't let it be an Arab. Now, obviously, according to some, and there's been debate about that, Arabs did commit this and this this crime, and that kind of. But was it fair for us to, you know, was it, how different was it? They were both heinous crimes, and yet many Arab Americans in this country are being subjugated. They are being persecuted, and some are being targeted. We have racial and cultural profiling now. There's a lot going on, and is there any way that you feel as an Arab American actor in this world that you have that you can impact these kinds of beliefs?
I don't know whether I can impact them. I only know that I can try to do my part, and everything you say is very true. You know, the reality is very sad. The reality is that I live and I bring up my daughter in a society where the environment is anti-Arab. And, you know, Timothy McVeigh, right? Timothy McVeigh?
Yeah.
Guy. Yeah. You know, nobody all of a sudden indicted his entire background. I don't know whether he's Scottish or Scandinavian or English or from where, but we, what we did was we separated him as a sad soul who made a huge bad choice and really, you know, destroyed a lot of lives. Just like the people who are responsible for 9/11 are a very small group of sad people who made a bad choice for their life and for other people's lives. It's horrible. It's a tragedy. But we shouldn't indict a culture or a country because the people who made that decision came from that country. I just came back from Lebanon. We stayed in Beirut. And the thing that was more overwhelming than how beautiful it was, how it could go from the sea to the snow, how brilliant the food was, how great the weather was. The thing that was most impressive to me was how kind everyone was, how there was no civil, there was no breaking of, no one broke the law. Internally, civilly, you know, I talked to a principal of a school, and he says he lets his 18-year-old daughter walk home at 2 in the morning, and I said, how can you do that? And he said, Kathy, inside, we have no, there's no crime. If everything's coming from the outside. And so, and I was just really blown away by how kind and friendly everybody was and loving and generous. And it wasn't because they knew me from Hocus Pocus. You know what I mean? It was just because I was just another American tourist, and I saw them being kind to each other. So I don't buy into that we can indict a culture or a country or even a city based on what a couple of individuals do. I can go to any corner of any city and find you a bunch of crazy people. Violent, crazy, hateful people. Anywhere. In the United States, in Europe, across the whole world, there are little pockets of really people who are making big mistakes. And I don't, just because they happen to be in China, I'm not going to say the Chinese are bad people. They're lovely people. So, you know, but do we live in an environment where if you are an Arab, you are suspected and accused and hated? Yeah, and I think we all are trying to do our part to show America especially and the world that we are a loving, peaceful people who want to stand up for our rights, but do it in a way that is nonviolent, and that what they are seeing are small examples that you can really find anywhere. So yeah, if I'm asked to go speak, I go speak. If I'm asked to tell my story, I tell it. I tell about my family. I talk about Lebanese people. I talk about Arab American rights. And, you know, I don't know if it makes a difference. I hope so.
Well, I believe that it does. I believe that anytime people like you, people like anybody in the culture mm-hmm. speak out, they're definitely reaching people and they can hear it. Dan's band, how cool. Have you ever thought of, have you ever wanted to do something with your husband, Dan, as far as songwriting or singing? You've got a wonderful singing voice. That I know for a fact.
Oh, thanks. Well, he's really the singer in the family, and my daughter is even, she can blow the roof off the house with her voice. She's 11-year-old, and she sounds like a 60-year-old African-American belter. She's got the best voice ever. But, you know, no, I am totally supportive of my husband's band, and we sort of built it up together, but I have no idea, no desire to jump on stage and to, you know, belt like she does or thrust my hips
and
out.
Belt it out.
The rock star. There's only room for one rock star in the family, and he can gratefully have it. I'm happy sitting and watching him and drinking my Diet Coke.
Oh, that's nice. You know, it sounds like you got a lot going on for you, Kathy, and I know for as an Arab American woman, you make me proud.
Thank you.
Do you think you've helped impact the stereotype of Arab Americans in this country?
Well, I think like any culture, or if you're gay or straight, or if you're identify yourself as anything that might be conceived as different, than to stand up and say, here I am, and I'm proud, and these are the great things about who I am, I think it helps. I think, you know, it's interesting. When I first started out, I got a call from a really great political Arab-American radio guy, and he said, Kathy, we want to give you an award for being a visible, successful Arab-American. And I said, oh, my gosh, that's great. And then he said, but I know that you're newly in Hollywood, and I wondered how you felt about the press knowing that you're Lebanese. And I said, oh, my gosh, I've been taught to grow up being so proud of the music and food and beauty of fun of my culture. And I understand where you're coming from, but the last thing that I would ever want to do is hide it. And should someone not want to work with me in Hollywood because of who I am, that's totally their choice. But I will accept with such gratitude, and especially if there's a great Arabic dinner that goes with it, any award ever, anybody using my name in any magazine or newspaper or radio show or interview ever, I always include where I'm from. It's who I am. I'm totally proud of who I am, and I'm sure there are others who don't like it, and that's their choice. But I will go to heaven saying proudly that my parents were both of Lebanese descent, and I had the best cultural upbringing I can think of.
Well, you sound like they did all right by you. I'll tell you that much, lady. What's your favorite movie, quickly? What is your favorite movie?
My favorite movie that I've ever seen. Well, that's a really interesting question. I'll tell you why. Is because when you say that, I think of the time I had, the experience I had doing it or watching it. So it's really different. Like, I can say I had so much fun on Soap Dish. I had the best time ever doing Soap Dish. I had a great time doing Numbers. I had a great time doing Sister Act 1. You know, but actually watching the movie, I think the best time I've had watching the movie was a movie that I did about 4 years ago called Say Uncle. And I got to depart from what I usually do. I played a homophobic housewife in an urban community, accusing this gay guy of being a pedophile. Now, that's really not really off the beaten path from what you're expecting, but watching the movie, that's the movie that I really enjoyed watching the most. But actually being there, making it, you know, Soap Dish was just a blast, and so was Sister Act 1 with Emil Ardolino and I've been lucky. I've had a lot of really... Oh, and then I did Dirty Blonde on Broadway. I got to play Mae West. That was so much fun and so fulfilling. That was awesome.
Well, I'll tell you, I can just... You are so, so the right person to play that part. I can just imagine you in that.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, really, Mae West is such an incredible and unique character, and I think that there's just something about you. When I heard that you were doing that, I thought, wow, they picked the right person for this.
It's a great play. It's by Claudia Shear, and she just wrote. In fact, I haven't been back to Broadway because it was such a dream part that I don't want to be let down. It was really, that play. If you ever get a chance to see it, so well written, so current. And so sort of with a radical edge, just like I like, a little tiny bit of message. And I got to sing and dance and wear costumes and be in New York. And it was really a check mark off the list of life.
Well, that must have been. You know, I have an obligation to ask you about Soap Dish. I was speaking to a friend earlier in the evening and telling him about the interview. And he was talking about Soap Dish as being one of his favorites. And he said, please ask her how it was to work with Sally Field. I've always loved Sally Field.
Okay, no joking. If you'd asked me this separately from telling me that your friend, I mean, you just heard me say it was my favorite process, and it was because of Sally Field. And I've worked with some great people, but Sally Field is by far the best person that I've ever worked with. She was so, I mean, you can always tell how the set is because it trickles down from the top. The set was so calm and so much fun and so friendly and so without stress, and it was because of Sally. And we had so much fun playing games on the side of the set during the day to late, the wee hours of the morning. She was generous as an actress. She was warm. She was fun. Tell him I'm totally with him. She's the best. She wins.
Well, I have to agree. I mean, I've always admired her myself. I think no matter what we want to say, that even the best actors, their real personality tends to shine through somehow. And
that's
one of the things that I've always, one thing that I've always said is that, you know, if there's there's that hint of anger, if there's that true humor, if there's that true kindness, it shines through more. And they tend to do more when they're in a role that is amplifying that part of their persona, I think.
Right. Well, she also played like a terrible person in that movie, but you're right. It's like she can't help but exude like the warmth and kindness that is her. So I think that's what made that character bearable, was that although she was just awful, you saw like the
there
true
was that
woman
edge
behind it.
Yeah, there was that edge. Something
fantastic. I love her.
Yeah.
And I mean,
well,
that was
I'll
only my like third. That was like my third movie, and I was still very insecure and nervous. And she just made me feel so comfortable. I don't get to see her enough. I really liked her a lot.
Well, I'll tell you, I can't imagine if I were ever in a position like that. I agree with you that would be just a wonderful, wonderful person to work with.
Whoopi Goldberg is great. Sorry.
Yeah. No, go
Whoopi
ahead.
Whoopi is great. Beck's great. I got to work with Bette Midler in Hocus Pocus, who was my idol my whole life. You know, I mean...
Oh, my God, you're so much like me. I absolutely idolize. As a matter of fact, I even wrote a song that one day I'm going to send to Bette Midler and hope that she'll sing. I love her.
You should. She's the reason. I would say Lily Tomlin, Bette Midler, Gloria Steinem, and my mother are the reasons that I'm all of me today. Like, those four women are huge, 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 huge in my life. And Bette Midler was the one who shaped me as an entertainer from the time I was 14 years old.
She was an amazing woman, and if she helped shape you, then she did an amazing, amazing thing. You are one of my favorite comedians and actresses in the world, and I really mean that with all my heart. You've always brought, you know, you just bring such a good, pleasant experience to everything that you're ever in. It's been wonderful having you. You know, I'm being bombarded here by everyone in our virtual auditorium asking you to do the Mae West peel me a grape line in her voice.
Oh, my God. Tell them that if I could, this was like 5 years ago, if I could remember it, I would so do it. I'm not being like a withholding actress, but I I would have to, like, go away by myself for 40 minutes and then come back and do it for you. But I promise I will. You're going to call me up someday, and we'll do a two-minute interview, and I'll do Mae West.
I'm going to hold you to that, and it'll be Mae West that we'll be interviewing. This has been really great. Thank you, Kathy, for being with us this evening. Folks, it was
wonderful
having you, and we appreciate your attendance to our shows tomorrow night. We have an economic specialist on with David Swanson. Please join us with the People Speak Radio. Kathy Nijmi tonight, thank you so much for being with us, Kathy. It's been an honor.
It's so my pleasure. Anytime.
You have a great evening. Good night, folks.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye, Kathy.
This land is mine, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. One day God will show me what I need. Right now, I'm not so sure about myself. Will I ever turn and face myself and learn to fly? I've always heard that mirrors never lie, but that's not true, because I see a man but feel a child. There are some of us who can hear a voice inside, a truthful voice that says, yes, you were born to fly, you were born to fly. We were born to fly high. We were born to fly, and so was I. Ask myself, what will I come to be? I have a choice now, so I guess it's up to me. Maybe I will make a difference in this world. Maybe I will teach another boy or another girl how to fly. Teach them all that they were born to fly high, that we were born to fly. So that tells you that you can't. And when you live in a world that says you must be something other than what you are, in a world that forgets you must born to fly. We were born to fly. We were born to fly.
Aloha, I am your host, May Leilani, and this is the Universal Spiritual Connection. Mahalo to all the listeners of BBSRadio.com and PalTalk.com. It is truly an honor to have each and every one of with us this evening. Our call-in numbers are toll-free, 888-228-4494 or 877-489-6350, and our direct lines, same area code, is 530-776-5185 and 876-9916. Boy, am I exceptionally excited tonight. We have a special guest with us this evening, and it's been a true honor not only to make a divine connection with this man, but also to observe and witness the great works that he is doing. I love his passion. I love his desire to reach out to be of true service worldwide to each and every one of you. Without further delay, let's all please give our guests for this evening a warm welcome to the Universal Spiritual Connection. Aloha, Ed.
Hello there, Leilani.
How are you this evening?
Just fine. How is everybody out there?
They are doing great. We have got a lot of listeners tuned in tonight, and they are very excited to share a part of themselves with you this evening.
Sounds good.
But before we get started tonight, Ed, and let me back up here for just a moment, if you will permit. Our guest's name tonight is Ed Edwards, and if you would, Ed, share a little bit about who you are and what brought you to this present moment.
Well, all my life I've been on a search. I had something that I knew was different from everybody else ever since I was a young kid. And living in the country here, I live in this little town they filmed the movie Deliverance in. I'm like way back out in the woods, kind of. And I grew up here, and I could never talk to anybody about this. There was no one around that could help me with it until I got on up, you know, into my teens. By then, I finally run into some doctors and physicists that kind of got me aimed on the right track and everything. But I went through my life not being able to really talk about or do anything, but play was something that only I knew about, seemed like then. Well, back in about 94, watching TV one night, I run across a show on the News Network channel about this one physicist, Dr. Levengood, and I managed to make contact with him, and the show was about his ability to measure charge density pulses coming from the human body. And I just figured, man, this guy here knows something. So I got up with him, and showed him what I could do, kind of flipped him out pretty good, and we did 4.5 years worth of studies on this energy. And he's wrote several papers on it, primarily one called Evidence for Charged Density Pulses Associated with Bioelectric Fields in Living Organisms. Well, while I was working with Dr. Levingood and all that equipment, and he had me hooked up to it and everything, I got to fine-tune what I learned how to do. And it's basically, as they say, controlling my higher brain functions to manipulate energy and to use that energy to take pain and suffering out of people. Or there's a lot of other things we can do with it. Well, by working with him, I was able to redefine or to get a real good control on this energy and to understand it. So now, after I've done all that time of learning and everything, then I can hand that to people. I can literally hand them a lifetime of learning experiences on my end in just a few seconds by allowing these, the people on the other end, to receive and take part and experience this energy. Well, I worked with Dr. Levingood from 94, and then 98 I came back here to my little country town, and then in 2003 I opened up my family business again. So I'm running it, and I do little healings on people as they come through and interact with people through the Internet all over the world. And I was getting kind of a little bit tired. I wanted to do more and more research on this. There's so much that we've got to learn yet, and that's where we're headed now. So I managed to, through a newsletter, Society of Scientific Exploration, I was managed to get in touch with a couple of different doctors and stuff. Those doing research on this, primarily at the Ryan Research Center up at Duke University. So I went up there back on September the 12th and got to work with them, worked with them in labs, and it turns out I'm the third person out of 30 years of them testing that's able to emit an electromagnetic or ultraviolet light that they're able to detect. And that's from what this energy produces or so. So I worked with them now and got to demonstrate it on a whole bunch of their colleagues and others. So we're all in negotiations and talking now of where to go with this stuff. They've already started a research project, give it a name, and they're terming it Bioenergy Emission Research, Ed Edwards Project. And that'll be coming up posted here in a few days on the Ryan Research Center webpage and stuff. So I'm going to be working with that, boys, and seeing how much we can learn about this stuff and teach it and use it to help people with. So that's kind of where we're into right now. And what I do is I like to, you know, the neat thing about this is I can sit right here in my office and through your radio show help people all over the planet, literally thousands or every one of them, all at the same instant in time. That's the neat thing about it. It fits your radio show. It's because it's very universal.
Yes.
All over.
And we're going to have, and you're going to actually do some of that work for all of us this evening. But before we do that, Ed, I'd like to invite all our listeners this evening to bbsradio.com. To my show page. And I, as you all know, I have a wealth of information about our guests. Also about the Ryan Center, the research that is being conducted. And I also have some links there as well. And as Ed had shared with all of us this evening, is that in a couple of days, that will be fully operational for all of you to go explore. And I do sincerely encourage each and every one of you to take a moment and really understand and get to know what the importance and the magnitude of the work that Ed and the researchers are actually doing. With that note, Ed, would you like to go ahead and get started on the work?
Yeah, you mean on the demonstration right quick?
Yes. Can I put a special request in there?
You sure can.
I would like to give a gift to all my sisters and brothers out there worldwide to remove all fear.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and I will turn this over to you.
Okay, and we'll apply that in with the intent.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, now for everybody out there in the audience, all those of you that can stand up, I'd like for you to all stand up for me there in your room. If you can't stand up, just go along with the hand exercises that we're going to do. You'll still get the same effects coming through. It's just kind of funnier, fun to watch people that are standing once we do the gravity wave part of this. All right, everybody hold their hands with their palms touching right out, you know, out in front of their stomachs, you know, about the same angle it would be if you're going to shake somebody's hands. Start out with your palms touching, your fingertips touching. Now, very slowly pull your hands apart out to about 1, 2, 3 inches. Now go back together, but don't touch. Get down close. Now pull them back apart. Come out 3, 4, 5, 6 inches, then back in. What you're doing is looking for a sensation that is created by an interaction of the electrical fields in each of your bodies and this implicate energy that's between you and I. And we're going to be working through this energy. That's it. Move your hands back and forth a little bit. You should find one of several different types of sensations. Some people will pick up on heat. Others will pick up on a tingling. Most of you will pick up on a magnetic type sensation. It's back and forth. That's it. I'm getting a lot of feedback here. All right. Now then, pull your hands apart. Let your arms go down beside your sides. Rotate the palms of your hands straight ahead, like that. Spread your feet a little bit and be aware of your balance. And don't let anything throw you off. You know, if you got to go backwards, you know, get where you can sit down. All right, I'm going to demonstrate a DC negative. That's what I'm going to be doing on my end. And then I'm going to flip it to DC positive. Y'all be aware of your balance in each one of the modes. Here is DC negative. I've started it. You may already feel it because there may be a time delay between me speaking and the time you all hear it on that end. But here's DC negative. I'll keep it going for about 15, 20 seconds. That's DC negative. And for learning this stuff, everybody, just become aware of this. Don't try to figure it out. I'll show you how to flip it here later. Now here's DC positive. And on with DC positive. This is something I learned to do while I was in Dr. Levingood's lab by watching his CDP recorders because it had a baseline, DC negative baseline, and I could flip it from negative to positive. Here's back to negative. Then back to positive. Okay. Well, the important factor between DC negative and DC positive that I've learned is some things like bones that are broken, arthritis, and things like that, I want to push in a DC positive field. But if I work with people that's like cancer, tumors, things like that, that we don't want to feed energy to, we can kind of shut it down by creating the negative fields. But it's easily done to demonstrate, you know, because it will mess with the balance of people. Okay, Leoni.
I am here.
You are there. Are you tingling?
Oh, yes, I am. But then again, you know that.
Oh, yes. There are quite a few of them out there tingling.
Yes, they are. And we have a lot of people tuned into the show tonight.
Good, good. And if there's any of you out there who's got any aches and pains, hurting, arthritis, things like that, just kind of focus on them while we do these energetics here. And see if those aches and pains don't go to tingling and getting warm. That's the neat thing about this. I can do it on literally thousands and thousands and thousands of people all at the same time. You know, help everybody on the planet if they were all listening.
And let's do that. Let's continue sending that energy, if we may, Ed.
I will, all the way through the show.
Excellent.
Okay. Get everybody to shake your hands. That'll break you loose from it. Sit back down and let's chat and enjoy.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, my goodness. I feel so. Thank you, Ed, because as
welcome.
You know, I'm very sensitive to energies. And so, Thank you, thank you, thank you for that. I wanted to share with all of our listeners tonight, I had the opportunity to actually interview Dr. Stephen this earlier today, and he's not going to be able to join us for this evening, but I did indeed get confirmation and was truly humbled by what not only him but his colleagues are doing as well with the work of the measurement. And I'd like to have you all sit back for just a moment and really think about the magnitude of their research of the energy exchange that goes on worldwide among all of us and how we can make a profound change just by working with those energy fields. If you would, Ed, share a little bit more about the scientific researchers that you are actually working with.
Well, there's the primary ones, Dr. Steve Bowman. Met him and Professor
I'm so sorry, Ed. Please forgive me for my interaction here, but I would prefer that we give you that time, and we do have a caller. So if you would permit, I would like to invite our caller on line three. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Leilani, it's Bonnie, the one you're on Joyful Light with. Hello to Ed. Welcome. My name is Bonnie, and I'm interested in your work. I, too, healed, but I used Beyonder. Hello?
Yes.
We're here.
Yeah, oh, you're there. Okay. I use Beyonder energy, which is same source as yours, but a different level, I would say. So what my question to you is, have you felt a difference in the energy since the new shift with the new paradigm? Have you felt your energy that you're working with becoming stronger or different in any way at all?
Yes, it intensifies every year. When I was a young kid, this was back 40 years ago, I could stand around and make people just barely go to tingling that were around me when I was a kid and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But now I break them out into a hot sweat and I'll... It just raises their energy levels, makes them feel real good and everything.
Yeah, so you've noticed the shift, because I know our work with Yonder has intensified even more this past year with the shift of what's happening with the Earth. So I was curious to see if it was affecting the energy that you're working with.
Yeah, everything is awakening. As people wake up around the planet, it helps to intensify for all that are already involved with it.
Yes, that is very true. So I will let you go now, and thank you very much for answering my question. And Leilani, we'll do the show tomorrow, and we'll be with you in the chat room later, and God bless.
God bless you as well, Bonnie, and thank you for calling in.
Of course.
Good night.
It was a pleasure.
Good night to you.
Good meeting.
Ed, let's talk about Dr. Steve and your other colleagues that you're working with. I'd like to dive into that more and about the Ryan's Research Center.
Sure. Like I said, I went up there and I got hooked up with Steve and Bill a day before I did my speech up there at the Stedman Center. And they have a special room, dark room, that they've got the photo multiplier and a few other gadgets wired up into it. But these units detect light that the human body or this energy will create when it's enacted upon. So the neat thing, they told me about the other two people that they had measured it from, and they had gotten these sparks or so, high outputs from them for a few seconds. Well, when they turned it on and we opened the shutter on me, they found out I have an energy that radiates from me just about continuous. But every time they would holler in a task for me to do, the light would drop off immediately. And after I finished thinking about whatever it was they told me to do, then it would resume its output and all. So it is very much connected in through the brain centers and all. And so would intensify the light, do different things for them, and then they were able to read it out on their photomultiplier out in the main part of the lab. And I have a feeling it's, or not a feeling, but we'll be able to use this equipment to help understand outputs and of the human bodies. What, you know, like working with people that are sick and stuff, I believe once they get it all sensitized outright, we'll be able to do healing energy on people and see the results of the interactions of the energies going through to them.
Yes. And you know, it's interesting, too. I was sitting here thinking how that will definitely change the face of the way we go about our health, our well-being. Mm-hmm. And if we can zero in on, you know, different parts of the body where it's carrying disease, we can do great things with that.
Exactly, exactly. My visions, I've had dreams about this. Is, you know, these little eyepieces these kids use to play these video games, cyberspace, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
I envision having a set of them where I can have all type of data and feedback coming back in from a person that is sick or so, or diseased or whatever, and by doing energetic things myself, be able to see the changes in their vital signs and be able to know and be able to interact and work with these guys and build devices to where we'll interact and be able to intensify what we can do here. And then, like I say, being able to work with them up yonder, we'll be able to find out exactly what frequencies does what. You know, I found out that I can make bone regeneration happen real fast, but I've got to create a positive field of energy to do that. I know that it takes a negative field of energy to take fire out of people, like if they get burnt or so. But I want to know why. Why this? Why that? And
yes,
with their help, I'm going to be able to know those answers.
Yes.
I learned how to do all kinds of things, but, you know, if you can't show it and present it, it's a loss.
Well, you're able to as well, Ed, and which you've already demonstrated on me, is even working at the different levels as well.
Yes. Yes, that's something. You can't just go in there and turn it wide open and work on somebody. You know, you got to be careful. It might, one of the things I learned a long time ago, I accidentally sunburned a friend of mine. They were hurting very, very bad with bursitis, so I turned it up too high, and it created a sunburn type effect on them and stuff. So from that point, I learned to always start slow and low and gentle with it.
Yes.
And then just slowly bring it up.
We have another caller, Ed, and I'd like to take this moment to invite our next caller on line 3 to the show. Please give us your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Melanie. How are you? It's
I
Lacey.
Am great.
I'm
and
in
yourself?
Florida. I'm fine, and hello to your guests, too. I just wanted to ask where all this technology and all this equipment, you know, what would hold for the future and benefit, you know, everyone, and getting, you know, illness and things like that, you know, highlight us a little bit in that area.
Where, what is the question again exactly? Where is the equipment?
Yes, you know, how would it benefit, you know, individuals, you know, in different cases? And, you know, what would it do for, you know, for us for the future?
Well, from what we know already, this will crank the immune system up using this energy like crazy. Can take pain out of people like arthritis, bursitis, and things like that very fast. I'm talking in seconds. People that've gotten burned real bad are able to create fields of energy that will just almost instantaneously take that fire away from them. It also works very good on migraine headaches. I've learned how to create a oscillating field of energy that I can hold above a person's head for just about 15 seconds, and a migraine will about clear up. Also, if you have a sinus headache, there's ways to expand and contract it to open up the nasal passages. This is something I've learned to teach to other people all in a very short period of time, just by allowing the other people to experience the energy, and they themselves are able to repeat it. knowledge of what to do with the energy and how to do the healing seems to come through the interaction of self-interaction with it. It's like the knowledge is kind of implanted into the energy, and it just you just kind of begin to understand all out of nowhere.
Right. Can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
Please? I would like to know, I am an empathic and a very sensitive to, you know, individual energies and stuff.
Yes.
Would this have any interaction, you know, as an empathic, you know, with energy and natural energy, soul energy, you know, physical energy, you know, through this process?
Yes, it will. It'll make you much more sensitive. It will give you abilities to use your empathics to monitor the other person, find out what's wrong, and then to help turn around or put back to the proper frequency what is wrong with them.
Wonderful.
Yes,
wonderful. I have to really read up a little bit more on this.
Well, that's what I'm hoping these guys up here can write the handbooks on it.
Well, you've been very helpful, and I appreciate your answer. And very informational. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in, Gracie, and you have a great night. Many blessings to you. This is great stuff, isn't it, Ed?
It sure is. It sure is.
Well, let me ask you this very important question, because I understand the magnitude of you know, your abilities and how it can change the future of the way that we heal ourselves. How is it that we may be able to support you and the Rhine Center?
Well, we're putting together, a new program. They're calling it Bioenergy Emissions Research. This is going to be just the first of many programs that I hope to get to work on with them and others up in the Research Triangle area. What we'll probably be doing, like I say, they're setting up a donations page there for people that want to contribute. They're also working on grants and stuff from various different organizations to help in this. And we're just going at it every way we possibly can, you know, trying to bring attention to it.
Yes, absolutely. I want to take this moment to really encourage all of you to my show page with bbsradio.com. As you all know, I have a wealth of information about our guest and tonight's show, and I'd like to encourage all of you I do have the link up at this time on the show page. I will keep this information up there for all of your convenience. Check in a couple of days. The links will indeed be working, and see how we can support this work. This is such incredible, important work for all of us that it will give all of us an opportunity to be able to heal various diseases and change the face of the future of how we approach our health, our well-being. You guys know what I'm talking about. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome our next caller on line 3 to the show. Please state your name and where you're calling from. Aloha.
Hello, this is Donnelly from Houston, Texas.
Hello.
And I have a question for Ed.
Okay.
Ed, for someone who is just learning how to learning to use energy, becoming aware of the energy around them, how do you suggest that we tap into this ourselves, and in what ways can we use it personally?
Okay. A while ago when I did the energy demonstration with you and I had you stand or sit, you hold the ball in front of you with your hands? Did you pick up on the magnetic sensations?
Oh, yes, I did.
Okay, start there. Do that morning and night and just play with that. The knowledge on how to do things will come through that. That energy is you interacting with all the other energy around the planet and stuff. There's all kind of things going on, and you can pick up on knowledge as that way. Start pumping that up. And then start playing around by applying energy. You'll learn how to project it out of your hands. And you can then move your hands over your body in various places. And if you'll try to keep, say you did a knee, have your left hand on the left side out and your right hand on the right side, a couple inches out, or any other part of your body, and imagine that you're projecting energy through. You will be actually creating what they call charge density plasma. This frequency energy will come out your left hand, through your knee or so, and into your right hand or any other area. The idea is to make the energy pass through whatever area is hurting or aching. And you'll feel the tingling. You'll get an instant feedback of warmth or whatever in you. And then, like if you have children or kids or anything like that around and anybody gets hurt, you can pump that energy up for a few seconds and then apply it through them and make them feel a heck of a lot better. Works very good on bee stings and hornet stings and all kinds of things. I can make the pain from them go away in just a few seconds. And it just neutralizes it. And this is, like I say, this is something everybody can do. And we just got to get this manual written right and learn how to open up our brains.
And so basically then we can become our own healing agents?
Correct. Pretty much so. And you can...
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your call in, and many blessings to you. I'd like to take this moment to welcome our next caller on line 3. Please state your name and where you're calling from. Oops, we lost our caller. Did we lose it? Okay, we lost our second caller. And that's okay, Ed, because we've got a lot to discuss tonight, don't we?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
You know, I'm really, really fascinated. As you know, I have been very passionate about healing work as well. And I was fortunate that I had the ability to actually see energy. At the time, I didn't understand that's what I was seeing, but now I have that understanding. But with that said, this was the natural state of being from the very beginning. Oh, we do have another caller, Ed, so hold your thought there for just a moment.
Okay.
And I'd like to invite our caller on line 3. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, I'm Vicki. I'm from upstate New York.
Just
want to know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just want to know, I do hands-on healing. The left hand would be the negative and the right hand would be the positive. And I've helped many people with this. For instance, I had a puppy that had parvo. And I called every hospital that would take the dog in, and I had to have money up front for them to help this dog. And I didn't have the money that they asked for. So I did the hands-on healing with this dog. It had an infection in, you know, from the parvo, and whatever shot that they gave him, it was the size of a softball. Okay, and I put my hands over it, and I did a prayer. And the left hand, basically took out the pain of the dog. And the right hand put the energy into the dog, and then all this infection started coming out of the dog. And this dog was limped. It didn't have no energy at all until I did the hands-on. And then all of a sudden, the dog acted like it was never sick. Period.
Yes,
and it was up running around after all that infection went out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think I did something to
that
dog? I did it to other people.
Your energy intent there definitely worked with it.
And, yeah, I had to do something. I was so desperate because I didn't want to see the dog die. I mean, it was close to death.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter was so upset. She was little at the time.
Create the ball of energy and learn with your brain how to make your hands push apart, which will be a positive feel. Create the negative, and the hands will pull together.
Okay. See, what I asked, you know, whether you're religious or whatever, I just wanted the dog cured. And I asked God for one thing. Give me a sign that it's working. He gave me a pain that came into the left hand, and then the right hand, he gave me that sign of the pain going in my left hand, okay? Then what I did was I shook it out into the air, and it was gone. The pain was completely gone, and then I took the right hand over it, and which put all the infection out of the dog, and it was completely healed. It didn't have no problem. I had wrote it down, and I studied it after I've done this, and let me tell you something. This dog acted like it never was hurt, never was dying. It had so much energy. It was just like running around like no problem. So what I want to know is what can I do without asking for the pain to go in my left hand, but yet have it work?
Learn to allow it to just flow on out of you. Don't hold it in you. When I do stuff,
I was shaking my hand to let it leave. It did release when I did that. But is there a better way?
Yes, there is. Let it go out your feet. It'll flow out of there just like crazy.
Okay. But it did work, and I just wanted to ask you, is there a better way to do this without having me feel that urge to have the pain going? I don't want it to go on me per se. I just want to know if it would work, was working, and it went into me, but then I shook it out.
What you can do, if I may interject here for a moment, and I'd like to invite you to consider when you're sending that energy, you can actually send a beam of light, and as you're sending the beam of light into this particular area, you can actually watch the lower frequency of the area dissipating, breaking up into tiny little particles into the light. So you don't necessarily have to use your hands to draw it. You can naturally use that beam of light to direct it. Does that make sense for you?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it takes energy to get rid of negative energy. You know, that's what I was thinking. And that's why I put my hands down close to the infection where this ball of infection was in. And
I do. And yeah, you're going to find, give this a chance, give this a try and see how that works.
I never tried that, and I think I will take your offer up on that. I've never tried that before. It's a good information for me.
This is what I'd like to add to that as well, is because one of the areas that I really enjoy with when it comes to healing, and Ed can definitely relate to this, is because when we're sending that healing energy out, we can expand it out. I can send a beam of healing energy out into a particular area and literally watch it dissipate into the light.
Oh, awesome.
It's just a matter of you switching channels and connecting with that you have that ability to do that.
Oh, I never tried that before. I think I'll do that. I will, try that because I've never tried that. I tried to take it on myself. You know what I mean?
Yes, and you do not have to do the healing that way any longer. And a lot of that has to do with the shifts that have actually taken place on the planet. So it's a matter of shifting that mindset of what we've been taught.
I get you. Yeah, I'll do that. I'll give that a whirl.
Keep me posted. I want you to keep me posted.
Oh, okay. I will. How do I get a hold of you? I just happened to pop into this room, this Universal Spiritual Connection room, and I think it's awesome. This is really a good room. How do I get a hold of you? Is there some way I can get a hold of you? Or?
My email address is imdivinelight@aol.com. And that is
I am divine light. Okay, I get you.
Okay,
yeah,
and you can add me as well.
You know.
I'm Jasmine022.
Okay, Jasmine. I really appreciate this.
Thank you for calling.
And I thank you for listening. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Many blessings to you. I'd like to take this opportunity to invite our next caller. On line two, please state your name and where you're calling from. Aloha.
Hello.
Are you? Hello.
Hello.
I can hear you.
Okay.
Like a
I
good
hear
commercial.
You.
I can hear you now.
I'm hearing an echo. Anyway, I'm Christine and I'm from Mississippi.
From Mississippi.
I have a question.
Can we get you to speak up just a bit louder for us, if you would, please?
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay, I have a question for Ed. I do energy healing too, and I have found out that when you're doing energy healing on people, that it's only a temporarily fix, unless you go deeper, like in their DNA or their cells. Do you have that same? Or do you just...
So far, it's been permanent on people when I work on them.
Oh, really?
I've got people I've worked on with bursitis real bad, like 8 years ago. I see them every day, and they ain't had a problem with it since. Arthritis in the hands and stuff, it seems to knock them out maximum 3 visits. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But they don't, I mean...
Dr. Levengood theorized that when I do energy on people, I go back in time to gather their original DNA at time of conception and bring the frequencies of that back out and overlay it on their DNA today. And that is wrong or diseased gets shifted back to the energy patterns of time of conception.
Okay, I need to talk to you about that. I need to find out how to go to the DNA.
I hope we're going to be able to write us a handbook on how to do all this stuff here over the next few years. And that will be part of my prime directive there, working with them up there.
All right, well, that was my question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited that you can do that. I mean, I know there's...
We all can do this.
Every one of us.
Yes, every one of us can do it, but it's like... It comes back because it's conditioned learning through your DNA.
Yeah, well, I played with it.
If you can stop it within 3 treatments, that's great.
May I share this, some thoughts with you? And I hear what you're saying. And the key with that is the frequency of the healer. You know, as you know, being a facilitator for healing, it's extremely important for a healer to keep their energy fields very high, keep the frequencies. You understand about the frequencies, correct?
You have to use it all the time.
Yes.
I'm connected into it 24 hours a day. I'm all the time doing something and knowingly doing something with energy along with my other regular work that I do for my business and stuff. I'm all the time connected in and interacting. I'll stand here doing my bookkeeping and stuff and running plasma field energy through my body like a massaging effect all at the same time.
Yeah.
Do healings and stuff on people and interact with business all at the same time. But I'm constantly running the energy and fully aware of doing it. Once you get locked into this stuff, it's like you're locked in all the time. It's a fantastic sensation being aware and knowing.
Yes. It's like exercising your biceps.
That's it. Except they're built into your head, but you're all the time doing something with it. And the more you do it, the better you feel. The more you learn.
Yeah, well, everything has energy in it,
Mm-hmm.
Right. Everything touch. Okay, thank you.
And you're very, very welcome, and thank you for calling in. Blessings to you.
You too.
Thank you, honey. Well, Ed, well, thank you all for your calls, and if any of you would like to continue calling in, please feel free to do so. I would like to take a moment to once again invite you all to my show page with BBS Radio. I do indeed, as you all know, have a wealth of information about our guest, the work he's doing, As you all know, I don't have to sit here and tell you the great importance of the work that's at hand. I personally thank you, Ed, because it takes a lot of spiritual maturity and passion and dedication to be of that divine service to everyone. We do have another caller, so if we may, I'd like to invite our next caller on line 3. State your name and where you're calling from, please.
Hi, it's Angela from Florida here, Jasmine. How are you?
Oh, I am great. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I have a question for for Ed.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you, Ed, I've spoken to you many times on this program. Could you tell me, rather than pushing that energy out through your hands, can you do it out through your voice?
Yes.
Do what now? I'm sorry.
You know, a healing energy. Healing energy. Rather than pushing it out through your hands, can you push it out through your voice?
Yes. I can. I don't have to use my hands. You can do it straight from the center of your brain. I demonstrate it with people by, like if they're in my shop here, I won't even do the hand thing, but I'll have them stand there and be aware of their balance, and I'll switch the polarity of energy from DC negative to DC positive from the end of my brain, and I'll have people standing behind them where they can't see, and I'll have them point which direction they want their person to move. And they'll point, and I'll generate that field of energy and push or pull the person that I'm intending it at. Directly from the center of my brain.
Right, that makes perfect sense to me because I don't use my hands. I use my voice, you know, if I'm beside somebody that's sick and stuff like that and actually needs help, I do it through my voice rather than through my hands. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Ed, was I use gathering up information that you can use this bioenergy to actually change weather patterns. You know, I'm in Florida. We've had really bad hurricanes, storms, floods, etc., etc. Are you thinking of doing a sort of investigation into how to use the energy to change the weather patterns to keep the storms away, to redirect them, etc.?
Not right now. We're primarily getting a full understanding of the energy and using it for, healing and helping other people with it. I've played around with some energy pattern stuff, but I don't have enough scientists and equipment and stuff to even say, yeah, I did something or no, I didn't. To do that would require having access to about all of NOAA and all their satellites and have all of them communicate with me and working with me. So right now we're not going to be doing anything like that. We're going to focus on teaching people to awaken and doing the more simpler tasks here of helping and healing and stuff. You know, I do want to do some planetary physics type studies, but that'll have to come on down the road.
Okay, that's fine, Ed. Thanks very much for your help and for your information. Okay? Bye-bye.
Thank you, Angela. Blessings to you. We only have a few minutes left of this broadcast, and I want to thank each and every one of you for your call-ins tonight. Thank you very much. I send blessings to each and every one of you. Ed, I know that there are some last-minute thoughts that you would indeed like to share with everyone, and I'm going to give you a moment to do that. Oh, we have another caller. Is it okay? I suppose
sure.
It is okay. Oh, wait, Ed. We have another caller, so I'm checking with the station now. I'm going to go ahead and invite this caller to the show. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Elizabeth Sterling, and I'm calling from California.
Welcome to the show. Thank you.
You did a good job, Leilani.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you.
Good job. Great job.
Much love and hugs, big hugs to you, young lady.
Thank you. I do have a question.
Sure.
How do you run the plasma field energy,
I've learned how to create and control magnetic fields in the left and right side of my brain. I've learned how to switch the polarity and amplitude of those fields of energy, kind of like grabbing it and stretching it out of shape. And by doing so, that creates this plasma energy that seems to run out through my hands and then between my hands. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. That's why I want to get up here with these guys up here at the university and get a hold of some equipment and kind of be able to look inside my head and see what's exactly happening. But we've had just some, you know, really neat things happen over the last few years working with different people like that.
Well, thank you very much for opening yourself up to do research. And I do have another question. Do I have time to ask that?
Please do.
All right. Have you seen or have you experienced healing of bones, you know, the kind of, what do they call it, osteoporosis?
Oh, yes, very much. Very fast. Literally in days.
Oh, I really would like to experience that.
Yeah, there's a scientist, a doctor doing research on that I haven't made contact with yet that I plan to do so, that is looking into bone regeneration and using energy for bone regeneration. That's up with, I believe, the University of Connecticut. I just haven't had time to contact everybody yet. But I hope to make contact with them and offer what I've learned to help intensify their research.
Well, again, thank you so very much. This is
You're
exciting.
Welcome. You're
thank
welcome.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Many blessings to you and be well. Wow, this is great, huh, Ed? I wanted to say this as well, and you brought that up earlier in the broadcast, is, you know, the DNA. And many of you are aware that I actually do DNA work as well. And I have found that was by working with the DNA is extremely powerful, especially when you're working with an individual during a healing process. And I do other works with the DNA, and you know, as you are, Ed, you really have tuned in the importance of working with that DNA, and even going back on before the DNA actually shifted into the discomfort within the physical body.
Yeah, correct. That's what Dr. Levengood theorized a long time ago. He said, Ed, I believe you're going back in time,
yes,
in a sense, when I'm helping people. Because we just had such craziness, you know, like what was wrong with them just seemed to disappear. And all.
Yes, yes.
And that's the only thing that could explain it, is for being able to capture their original code or frequency and bringing it out and overlaying it over what they've got now, and making what's now revert back to the old.
That's correct. Absolutely correct. I love DNA work, let me tell you.
Yeah. Well, I learned it doing technical remote viewing with Dr. John Getty. That was a wild few experiments.
And we're going to do more shows, so I want to really thank each and every one of you for tuning in. And quick reminders, we'll keep this information posted up on my radio show with BBS Radio. For all those in Paltalk, we have given you the information as well. And if you should have any further questions, please do not hesitate or contact Edward. I want to call you Edward. I've been doing that a lot lately, Ed, changing people's names. But it's been a true honor to have you with us tonight. And I'd like to give you a moment for your last-minute thoughts, if you'd like to share that before we say goodnight.
Well, let's just light everybody up good. Yeah, that leaves them with a good warm sensation. Everybody
okay.
out there will do their hands in and out just a little bit, get that magnet going and kind of hold it there. I'm going to rev the juice up here. That's it. And try to bring everybody up. I'd like to bring you all up to my level. Then let's see how many more levels on up we can get. That's it. Just get aware of it, everybody. Feel that energy and become aware of it.
then just play with it. Don't stop playing with it. Play with it morning and night, and you'll learn how to do all kinds of things. It'll just come natural to you. It's already built into your DNA. We just need to wake it up in you. That's it. Just work it back and forth a little bit and play with it. Play with it with different people. This is a very interactive energy, and it's really fun to play with other people. And so,
thank you. Thank you, Ed. It's been a true honor to be on this show with you. And as you know, we've invited you back to the show. For all those in Pal Talk, our guest will be joining us for any further questions. And so stay with us, all right? But I'd like to remind you, we are the voice of we the people. We are the empowerment. It is time to let go of our smallness and claim and be our greatness. Blessings to each and every one of you. Good night.
One day God will show me what I need. Right now, I'm not so sure about myself. Will I ever turn and face myself and learn to fly? I've always heard that mirrors never lie, but that's not true, because I see a man but feel a child. There are some of us who can hear a voice inside, a truthful voice that says, yes, you were born to fly, you were born to fly. We were born to fly high. We were born to fly. And so was I. I ask myself, what will I come to be? I have a choice now, so I guess it's up to me. Maybe I will make a difference in this world. Maybe I will teach enough.
They're starting to. Maybe they don't want to. But
well, he still has fans here, you know. This is for all the fans in Germany, actually. This is Senior Sieber calling. I don't need to tell who I am because everybody here knows it anyway. But there's German fans who really want to hear Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show on bbsradio.com.
Just got it, forgot it. Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program I bring the latest and cutting-edge spiritual revolutions that are happening around the world, in this country, and in our minds. Tonight I have two good friends, special guests, that are going to give us a kind of analysis of New Realities and where we've been, where we're going, and how it's proceeding. I have Paula Gloria, the lovely Paula Gloria, and the Molly Lama, as she's known, or Molly Cheshire.
Or will be known.
Or will be known at some point as soon as she publishes the adventures of our trips around the world. Thank you both for being special guests on New Realities. So, any comments so far?
We're happy
to be here.
I feel very special.
Right. You are special. But, you know, I want to see, like, you know, it's been probably 8 years since we've joined forces, and how things are proceeding, and where does it look like New Realities are going? Where are the latest avenues of thought taking us? What's the leading edge? What do we have yet to cover here on New Realities? Molly, what do you think? Where are we going?
Well, I mean, I feel like between the three of us, we kind of cover the gamut.
Right, right.
Because we all seem to have a common theme, and yet we express it in uncommon ways.
Well, tell us how you express it. You know, what's your mode of expression?
What am I most interested in?
Well, you're a writer. You're expressing, like, what we're covering on New Realities, right?
Right. No, I mean, I think that I express all the what we're doing with sort of a sense of humor, and that I find that when we take ourselves less seriously, that it's much more expansive. Expansion through humor, and of course that all sounds very dry, but
yeah, let's get some humor in that expansion. Well, let me ask the talker in the group, that would be Paula Gloria, because, you know, she always has something to say. You know, we sort of discovered her, Molly. And now she's gone on.
Wait. I discovered her.
Well, I discovered her, too. But she's gone on to do Howard Stern. She has her own weekly show on Manhattan
Daily
Table.
Daily show.
Daily show. For every day, 5 days a week. So, Paula, what excites you lately in the work you've discovered?
Oh, at the moment I just went to the Players Club with Demetria Daniels, and there was this fellow named Joe Franklin who was one of the first interviewers on television, and he interviewed Marilyn Monroe and Frank Sinatra, all in the 50s when television was just coming about. And I had, you know, shot a lot of the stuff, you know, shot some footage around the reception, and I saved stuff for when he spoke. And he only spoke for 3 minutes when he got the award. The whole event was to honor him. It was so humble, I thought. And yet he was so humorous. I actually missed a crack that he made about Howard Stern. So there was kind of an acknowledgement that the Internet is coming into the fore. And I said that I would put this up on the Internet.
Well, he must be old by now. He's been around forever.
He is old. No, he's definitely old. But they were giving out books. Kind of little paperback books. They were giving them out free, and then I met his biographer. So I'm very excited because the Players Club is right by Gramercy Park, and it has that sense of history. And I love the idea of tying in the historical context, even though you're talking about the Internet.
But how does that fit into your work? Tell us about your work.
My forte is the Internet. Like, if Howard Stern calls himself the king of media, I honestly feel like... for better or for worse, I'm queen of the media.
Queen of the internet.
Internet.
In what way? What do you mean you're queen?
Well, John,
I would say you're queen of YouTube.
Possibly YouTube, yeah. I mean,
which
John
is not
Galino,
just the internet.
Yeah, John Galino was at master control at MNN, public access stations, when for no technical reason during 9/11 they said, cut the channels.
Oh, yeah.
I feel really, really honored to even know such a person.
Well, who gave the order to cut the channel on 9/11 to this?
Well, my research into binary economics tells me that if the original Constitution said that each man was entitled to life, liberty, and property, because mm-hmm. people were serfs on the land, and when land was exchanged by the royalty that owned it, the serfs went along with the land. So this isn't just a black phenomenon about slavery.
And wait, but Paula, what does this have to do with cutting the channels on the Internet? I mean, cutting channels on 9/11.
Oh, you interrupted me. I got my flow interrupted here.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so let me backtrack. Okay, so slavery, corporate slavery, exists today. And on MNN, when the channels were cut, the question is, who came in and who told him to cut the channels? When the ownership of property is unknown, when it pretty much is, you don't really know who's responsible for MNN, then what can happen is you can have sort of a criminal element come in and kind of take charge and take over.
What do you mean you don't know who's responsible for Manhattan Cable? How could we not know who's responsible?
Well, Alan, a lot of times.
I mean,
who is
the executive and then the board of directors and
then
Time
Warner. When I talk to Dan Coughlin, he's just very polite and nice and good PR, but I don't really get the sense that anything that I call to his attention that he has the power to do anything about it.
Well, who has the power there?
Whoever has capital ownership. That's what I think we have to determine. And so if life, liberty, and property was in the original Constitution and it was changed to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which is kind of, you know, a mamby-pamby kind of airy-fairy term that you can't really take to the bank. What's the pursuit of happiness? You can't really hold it.
Well, that's the spiritual quality
Just a second. Before Molly interrupted or distracted me, when I was talking about the serfs didn't have ownership of the property on the land upon which they were working. And if they said, well, heck with farming, let me just go hunting, they weren't allowed to even hunt in the forests of the noblemen. They would be lynched for poaching. So that avenue was cut from them, too. So essentially what you're doing is you're depriving somebody from life. And that's what Louis Kelso said, is the pursuit of life means you are entitled to livelihood. And this is why I'm excited about binary economics.
But isn't that what government and the Constitution guarantees or supposedly...
Government is supposed to assure you of not being abused by other people.
Right, and that's like even a nobleman. Wouldn't that be true?
Yes, I mean, I think that was the dream of America. I mean, Molly descended from two signers of the Declaration of Independence, so I'd like to hear her comments.
Well, let's hear her comments, because she also goes out with fox hunters. Noblemen, American
fox
noblemen.
Fox hunters are fine.
No, but there sort of is an American nobility, and I would like to hear from Molly about that. So,
well, as my father said, well, what does it feel like to be a blue blood? And he said, chilly. But
that's a good one. Is there nobility? Do we have that kind of division in America, would you say?
I would say we do. It's just not as overt as it is in other countries.
But I think this is the whole thing with the Wall Street bailout. How much does government, how much do they interfere within big business?
Well,
right?
I think Louis Kelso spelled out something a lot of people know. Wall Street runs by commissions. It really has very little to do with the economy. And as long as you keep grumbling about Wall Street, you're really distracting yourself from the real issue, which is who owns the land. Like when I told Molly... four times as many Chinese now inhabit Siberia than Russians, which means essentially China now owns Siberia. Siberia is part of China. So Molly said, well, really, America has most of the arable land, which is a valuable land, but the question is now, with whoever owns the mortgages, who owns this arable land? And I don't
China.
Need to raise any anti-Chinese sentiment. I think we need to go into the area of... of unity with all people, and that's why I call upon you, Alan, and with your training.
I want to hear what Molly has to say about that. So, Molly.
Well, I tell you what's scary right now, is that China owns a lot of our debt. And what's interesting, too, is that I was speaking to a German guy, and he was saying that there's such a different perspective, and that one of the reasons why they... forced the bailout is that China basically said, you know, we're not going to finance any more of your debt if you don't do something about this. I mean,
but
maybe I...
why can't anyone explain where the bailout and all that money's going? I have not heard a reasonable accounting of what's supposed to happen, and it seems so vague, this whole economic, but obviously the world economies are all connected. Obviously there is a one world government that's controlling the world economies, and someone's manipulating it. That's what it seems like to me, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know if it's as monolithic as all that. You know, I think that there are factions that are constantly jockeying for position, but I don't think that there's one guy up there that is actually ruling it all. I don't really think. I think there's kind of an oligarchical structure.
Well, some people, as far as one guy, some people feel there's one nation and it's all going over to Israel that's going to be using all of the Arab nations as satellite nations, and the real conflict is going to be to fight China, and that America is going to be relegated as a third world country, and the real, you know, the new up and coming power is Israel, and China has got to square off with Israel.
I don't. Who says that?
I don't buy that.
That does sound ridiculous. Where did that come from, Webster Tarpley? Or where did
makes
that come?
Total, it actually makes a lot of sense.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Why not?
Israel has nothing to gain. Israel just wants to be safe in their land.
No. Even Norman Curland said it was really sad the day that Israel became a Jewish state, because at that point, anybody who wasn't Jewish living in that area was relegated to being a second-class citizen.
Well, that's true. That's why there needs to be a Palestinian country, a country of Palestine, because, you know, and we need to have borders that are readjusted.
But when you make a two-party state there, it's just like saying any time you bring in a bunch of refugees, you're going to just splinter off whatever the area is, create two states, and then when you've got that two thing running, then you have this conflict running.
But that has nothing to do with Israel wanting to be a world power. I don't think Israel has anything to gain as a world power.
No. All of these people are puppets, just like McCain is, just like Obama is.
You think Obama's a puppet?
I definitely, personally, I believe a lot of the stuff that was brought before me about his sexual indiscretions and so on. I don't like to bring it forward because I told Webster that I don't like to break people's hearts. I like to have something.
Well, you're the only one saying this. If it was happening, it would be out in the papers. Don't you think the Republicans would use that?
What about 500,000 hits on YouTube? What about the fellow, I think his name is Lewis Sinclair, talking about his encounter with Obama?
What was his encounter with Obama?
Is it blowjobs? Is it cocaine?
Oh, come on. People can make anything up and make it sound true.
I think it's sort of known that a politician's lifestyle is pretty, you know, wild and abandoned. They're indulged. They're sort of fanned up. Look, when I went to Howard Stern...
He's a young guy. He doesn't have time.
I'm trying to tell you, when I went on Howard Stern, they were blowing a lot of air up my butt. You know, they do that. They're trying to build an image, an illusion, and
that's right. They're trying to build a negative one about Obama. Obama didn't have anything.
You know,
too young to have been like one of those kind of lazy politicians, just have going along for trying to really.
I think this is the whole idea of cultivating someone. I mean, if he was born in Kenya and they're doing such a big thing about him really being in Hawaii and so on, but that's not really of a concern for me about Obama. I don't even bother myself with these people. I always say, forgive the puppets. Because the sooner you can forgive, the sooner you have compassion, the sooner you're going to get to the puppet masters behind them.
Well,
who are the puppet masters then?
I mean, let's say, who do you think are these puppet masters?
I would say whoever it is that feel they have to amass a lot of wealth in order to make life meaningful, and then they start to notice that they're isolated. They're not really connected with all of life. And at the end of the day, the real enemy is death.
So who are these people? Molly, help me out here. No, I mean, really, I don't know who these people are, because as soon as you give a label to these people that, you know, you're separating them, you're making enemy images. Like, you know, that's the first rule, right, Paula?
Yeah, I agree.
So do you agree with what she's saying, Molly?
Well, I think that there's definitely a certain amount of manipulation that goes along. Anybody who gets to that level of power in either party is going to have a lot of paybacks. You know, I mean, let's say even if Obama is totally clean and he doesn't have a whole bunch of skeletons in his closet, you know, to get to that, I mean, for people to invest that much money in his campaign, they're going to want something in return.
Well, what do you think they would want in return?
I mean,
they just want a new America. Maybe they want a free country. No, I don't know. I'm being a little idealistic.
No,
but
no,
what
that's
do you,
okay. That's okay.
What do you think?
I think idealism.
I mean,
good.
That's what I would like to see is a free country. But unfortunately, it seems like, you know, we allow people to take advantage of these positions of power.
Right.
I mean, I'm not talking about Obama per se. I'm talking about anybody that has that much money or that much at risk.
Well, the question I wanted to ask you, you know, you sort of grew up blue blood from a, I would guess, a privileged family, very nice parents, but
we're
did you
lower,
feel...
We're lower upper class.
But did you feel privileged? I mean, in my, where I grew up in suburbia, it was all Jews, Italian, Irish, Waswat, but it was all kind of equal. I didn't get there was a sense of one privileged society over the other, but did you feel like you were privileged in some
way?
Oh,
yeah. I mean, actually... You know, I went to an upper-class boarding school, private school as a kid, and even kids in, like, the first, second, and third grade, there's this whole pecking order that's according to money. And I was kind of happy when I ended up having to go to public school in Florida, you know, because of the shrimp farm. And it just kind of got me out of that whole kind of, identifying with material wealth.
You could have been one of those people, huh?
Sure.
And then how do you think your take on, like, what Paul is saying would have been different? Would it have been
different if what?
If she grew up in that material universe, in a sense.
You mean if she didn't?
If she did.
No, no, no. What I'm saying is that...
If she didn't go to school.
I know of that world, but I got out of it at a very young age, even though I'm surrounded by it. It doesn't affect me in the same way. I mean,
what? But
like,
if you didn't get out of it, what would you think about what Paul is saying? Or what do you think the world that you were in would think about this kind of underlying current that exists within politics?
I think that there is definitely, in my experience in the whole upper class, there is a cynicism and sort of a insulation against reality. You know, it's sort of like...
I believe you. But then it means that there's people even above the upper class that are pulling the strings class doesn't even know about. What?
Alan, just take in what Molly's saying, and let's see if we can go with that deeper.
Well,
Do you think, Molly, that insulation against reality, at the end of the day, people feel that, I mean, this is how I felt when I made $5 million. I started to live in an insulated world also, because you can go anywhere you want, do anything you want, and all the people, the friends that you had before, they don't have that ability. And so that automatically starts to isolate you. And after a while, you start to realize that your very money is creating barriers between you and some of the constraints that other people have, and as a result, you and them can't empathize with each other that much, and you feel isolated. But one is definitely clicking is the clock, and at the end of the day, we're all faced with death. I think the real enemy here is death.
That's what we did that whole show about yesterday with the possibility of physical immortality.
Well, it was interesting because my brother was talking to this guy who, you know, had billions of dollars, and he says, well, you've got all your money things. Don't you worry about anything? He goes, yeah, I start to worry about my health. So just as Paula was saying, is that, you know, the bottom line is that you can't cheat death.
Right, but I'll get there. But what I was interested more in the social question of what you just stated with, if those upper classes are cynical, then it means that somebody above them is actually pulling the strings. It's not even the upper class.
No,
they're just as much pawns as the middle class and the lower class.
Yeah. Maybe that's what you're getting at when you did acupuncture on me and I had that revelation about my UFO abduction and things like that, Alan.
I love how Paula brings it all together.
No, and how I was under the same beneficent force of evolution that the people who were operating on me was.
Right, I got that.
So I think, you know, what
you think the upper class are operating on the same. But I
no, I think you have just as much need for compassion to those who are kind of rather lonely. I mean, you've got.
I know, but I'm not. Look, my question is not about compassion. I'm saying if it's not the upper class that are pulling the strings, and yes, we can have the compassion for them because they're just as. So then, who is what
well,
class
okay, here's,
is
well,
ruling?
But Alan, you believe your God within, right? So the answer is obviously you.
I know, but let me hear. I mean, I get that. That's, of course, the foundation.
Well,
I want to get the sociological, political landscape down.
Well, okay, okay. Here's a way to put it. I mean,
yeah.
Paul, what I wanted you to tell about is your experience with the brother of the shadow, that even though this guy who was so rich and he was doing all these things, that he wasn't even getting the real Shakti. There was some other force behind him that was taking it all away, so that it creates this hunger.
But, you know, that's a really good point, Molly, because it means perhaps there are, like, these non-physical entities that are manipulating realities for their own Shakti pleasure, you know?
I think so. And
well, that's what I got from the Mahatma letters, that there's two ways to achieve immortality, and one is dedication to either creation or destruction. You have to pick one or the other. And so my encounter with the brother of the shadow was an encounter with somebody who picked destruction. And what I eventually encountered through a person's perversions was that, you know, in my sexual experiences, my energy, only about 15% he was receiving, so I could have compassion for the human being. But the force that was behind him was an immortal that was sort of attached to his family by generations. And he was weary. He knew it was very predictable and very easy to gain this energy of human beings who were just very much victims of their pleasure.
You know, do you think the brother of the shadow is behind the world economy in the same way that it sucked
energy? No, I think the brother of the shadow and the good brothers, you know, the white brotherhood and all that, it's about equal.
You do, but someone's behind the manipulation of the pursuit of happiness or the lack of the pursuit of happiness.
But does that have to be a bad thing?
Well, that people can't pursue happiness, I think it is a bad thing. I mean,
the pursuit of happiness is a bad thing?
No, the inability for people to pursue happiness and be enslaved to a materialism is...
Yeah, but people like it. You can see it even in people's sexual preferences. People like to be involved in some of these perversions where they're the victim. They pay...
They like it because either one...
Going to the East Village to somebody's dungeon. They like it.
I know, but maybe they're possessed by the brother or whatever dark force you want to call it. It
but
might not even
later.
Be them or their condition or their numbed
out...
I think it has more to do
with conditioning.
Well, or they've numbed... Maybe it does, but I think there's those two elements for those kind of darker sides. There's the numbing out, the inability to feel, so they need, like, pain to feel... And I do think there are these darker realms that
whatever it is, I don't think judgment is going to heal it.
It's not about judgment. It's just about expressing what exists, the truth, revealing to people. Like, isn't that what you want to do with 9/11 in whatever version that you're on now of who's behind it, you know? Is to reveal what you feel is the truth.
But when I say when somebody presents me this whole idea about Israel, you know, running things and how the U.S. is giving this ungodly amount of money for defense, it's like I'm saying, if you had a dear child that you loved, would you really be sending your child to school with switchblades? Is that the way you want your child to get along with his classmates?
Well, in this case, you can't take the child out of school. There's no place for Israel to go. I mean, it's like... Maybe you have to defend it. I'm not saying weapons are good.
No, but that's what I'm saying. You have to kind of bite the bullet and take a look at the history.
But it's not about Israel. It's about all the people that manufacture weapons that get rich off of weapons production.
Yeah,
you know?
I know. And that's, same thing with drugs. You've got to just say no, but how do you get rid of the addiction? You have to go really deeply into what addicts people, and including the sexual addictions. I'm not talking with judgment about people who go to dungeons. I'm saying it's a fact. People like to be abused. People like to be victims. As long as people like to be victims, you're going to have people, they're going to be tyrants.
What did Molly say?
Well, the thing is that what's interesting to me is that when you're a victim, you don't have to take any responsibility.
Right.
But I don't think Israel is a victim. I think from what I know, and I've been there, I think Israel just wants to live in peace. I think maybe they were a little aggressive
but, you know,
in acquiring... Wait, let me finish. They may have been aggressive, I think, in acquiring lands that were originally Palestinian, and I think that's a fault, you know?
Alan. I don't think they were aggressive. I think most of the people that came there just came there because somebody said, here's some place, you can get some free land. They didn't ask too many questions.
Well, they needed to leave Europe. I mean, Europe, after killing the Jews...
It's a very sad thing that they weren't allowed into America.
They were allowed into America. Lots of Jews.
No, they weren't. Not
Delano
before.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt turned them away.
No, I know. Roosevelt turned them away, but a lot of people, I think, were admitted. And I mean, of course, Roosevelt turned a bunch, that whole ship away, and that was awful. But
it really was,
you know,
awful.
I also
really,
think
really
that was the reason it became a Jewish state, was because Jews felt safe someplace, and of course it's not very safe.
Well, Alan, let's put the ball in your court. You want to do this book at some point about how most Jews are Ashkenazi. Can you talk about that, what that means?
Well, I will talk about that, because I do think that... There was the whole Zionist thing was a manipulation to get land in the Middle East. And my research shows that 95% of the world's Jews are genetically related to a tribe in Eastern Europe that converted in around the 10th and 11th century to Judaism. And they
I'm fascinated. Why did they convert to Judaism?
Well, because I think the leader of the Khazars, that's what they were called, and the land was called Khazaria, felt like it was time to go from nomadic paganism to a kind of monotheism. It was kind of like the fashion of the time. So he called the three
he called
representatives of the three religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, to his court, and they presented their case for conversion. And for some reason, he picked Judaism. And I sort of had a vision about it. I felt like this leader of Khazaria picked Judaism because he knew, through it all, his people would be preserved as a race unto themselves. So even though they were called Jews, they would be able to trace their lineage back to Khazaria, the head of the Khazars.
But not Jerusalem.
No, what?
But not Jerusalem.
Well, not Jerusalem, but those that would reveal the secret at one point, they would show that it was part of the Eastern European tradition.
This is so obvious, that's my
opinion, and I think that was a way of him to preserve his people, because if he converted to Christianity, it would have been absorbed into something else. So,
is that only your opinion? Of course it's only my opinion,
because
I have substantiated
that there was a conversion. Why there was a conversion, I don't know. I know there's a book called The Dictionary of the Khazars that came out in the early 80s that goes through some of this. But it was sort of
weren't the Jews persecuted in the 10th century? I mean, it seems kind of late to convert.
Not in the 10th century. They were persecuted after that. And they were persecuted in the western part in Spain, you know. But they kind of rode on the backs of the Moors into the whole Portugal, Spain, the whole invasion in from Africa up. But the eastern branch, I think, we're developing their own forms of ritual. And there was a convergence somewhere in, like, Germany of some of the Eastern and Western traditions, you know. But I think the Eastern European Jews, the Ashkenazis, brought a whole new set of mysticism to the...
You mean from their shamanic background?
Yeah, from their shamanic background, they brought the whole, like, Tree of Life thing into Judaism as well. So there was a real conversion of culture.
You mean the Kabbalah is from the steps of Russia?
Well, I don't know. I don't know where the Kabbalah is from, but I...
Kabbalah was much older than...
It was brought back by...
The shamanic steps of Russia can be very ancient, too.
Yeah, I actually don't know the origin. I know it had this revival with the Zohar, and so... But what does that
mean? But you know what's going to be the great test, you guys? It's what Swami Kaleshwar was trying to say. This issue, when you really...
Which issue is that?
Oh, trying to figure out, is this true? Is this someone's speculation? Is this documented? This is where you need a master to come around and say, prove it to me.
Yeah, but Paula, you just said we're all masters, but God within, you know?
Let me finish, Alan. This is where you need a demonstration of the miracles, and this is what separates the mice from men. Everybody can't do them. They can't raise the dead. They can't walk on water. They can't heal
the blind.
Well,
we just met someone last night who's been living on nothing but sunlight. Is he a master, or did he just get the technology?
He said he's not a master, but he definitely has mastered a certain aspect of transferring
energy from the sun into his body. And everyone can do that. If you look at sunlight for 6 months in a row as the sun is setting or coming up, you'll also be able to live on sunlight.
But you know what, Paula, I still think that there are some masters out there that have the cities, but they don't have the wisdom that goes along with them.
Well, look at our good friend Sai Baba, not to, like, shake anyone up, but, you know, supposedly he has the cities, but there's some other levels of mastery there.
I think the problem is that he may have once had the wisdom, but for whatever reason, he got overcome by having to produce these miracles on sort of a command basis, and I think he lost the ability, and then he had to sort of resort to darker arts.
Well, I don't know. People say that happened to Muktananda as well, you know, and live the great man. Well, it actually goes back to what Paul Lowe said, that great sage himself. He said you could be 95% God-realized, but you need to be self-realized as well. And I think that's the split. Most of these great teachers and gurus are God-realized, but they forgot a little part of the human. And I think what we're trying to do is bring it both together. So what Molly said is right. You could be a master, but you have to work on that other part that's also human. And I think that goes back to the original conversation about binary economics and developing a greater humanity for the whole planet. It doesn't matter how spiritual you are, we have to treat each other with decency and respect.
Here,
well,
here.
That gets into justice, which is Norman Curlin's point, and Robert Ashford said, even if you don't believe in justice, even if you're the most evil man in the world, you would still see that binary economics is going to benefit you. Even the rich will be benefited.
Well, why don't you go into what binary economics is and go into the spiritual aspect of that, okay?
Well, they don't talk about a spiritual aspect, but basically it's just saying that wealth is created from two ways, labor and capital. And since Adam Smith and the creation of our country, where 95% of the people lived on the land, and whatever they produced from chopping down wood and building their fences and taking care of their cattle and planting their crops, that was all produced by their labor, an interaction between labor and a certain amount of land. But today, capital and technology has advanced 10,000%. So whoever owns the capital is going to own the power of the labor. And yet our economic theory doesn't keep up with that. And as a result, people are slaves to corporations, so that when you have buyouts, even buyouts that are leveraged buyouts, means that you're buying the stock based on the earnings of the future capital. That was originally developed by Louis Kelso to allow the employees to have ownership of the company. Even though they didn't have the money to buy this, they were going to participate in the creation of something that any insurance company would be happy to insure, because they knew that this company would be producing in the future goods that could be sold and paid off the debt.
But isn't that the pursuit of happiness then, would you say?
The pursuit of happiness is sort of a vague term that replaced property, life, liberty, and property. So if you don't own property, it means that you're a serf to the land.
Oh, well, you didn't say that before. So you're saying it was a purposeful manipulation of the founding fathers to kind of gyp citizens out of property?
Yes, it wasn't only blacks that were slaves, and this is kind of a deeper aspect of the anti-Semitic feeling, because slavery really started up in Boston with some of the Jews who were financing the slave ships. And they
Why do you say they were Jews?
Because they were.
How do you know? Where's proof? How come I never heard this before?
I'll show it to you.
You have to show it to me. You can't just make statements.
It's some of the most anti-Semitic sentiment I have ever seen. It's some of the most hateful. And this is where I think you get into the area of secret knowledge or any knowledge that's deep. A master has to make sure that people are going to assimilate this in a constructive way. So there's a fellow on YouTube called ProThink, and he's half black and half white, and he's an extraordinarily handsome man. He said that he can kind of pass off in each group, as opposed to his brother, who's very black. And he's done some research on this, and it shows that the reason they had this anti-Semitic feeling was because they wanted slavery out of America, because when you brought slaves in, it meant that at a time of low technology, when you didn't have machinery, anybody who owned slaves could have charge of taking possession of more of the land and turning it into wealth for their aggrandizement. And even, incidentally, Native American Indians owned black slaves. And eventually, of course...
Where do you hear all this? Where do you get this? What books are you quoting from?
I'll find it out for you.
Well, yeah, because you just can't make statements that somebody may have made up.
It's totally outrageous to you, isn't it?
I just never heard it before. It's only outrageous because, you know.
I know. It's like you always think that Indians, Native Americans, were just living in teepees. You never think of them as owning plantations.
Well, did they own plantations?
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's a myth of Native Americans as being
black slaves.
Well, I know the other myth about Native Americans, not to say anything, is that there was a lot of wars among themselves even before the white man.
I know. But see, let's stick on this property, this thing of binary economics.
Well, make it a little
capital.
More interesting that people can relate to. So.
Human beings were used as capital. And so what we have to learn how to do, since today capital is now 10,000 times more productive than labor, we want to be not labor workers, but capital workers.
But don't you think it goes back to sucking people's energy, like you said, the brother of the shadow, those dark forces? If you use people as labor, basically slaves, you take away their humanity, don't you?
Well, but the problem is, while you're doing it, people are feeling an intense amount of pleasure. They love doing it, and they're going to keep signing up for the prostitutes and
Who loves doing it?
People like it.
The people that are being enslaved?
The guy I had sex with
that
night.
Well,
the guy that wanted me to save black people loves it,
but the enslaved population obviously doesn't like it. And isn't that what we're here to do, is uplift the population? What do you say?
Do you believe their God within or not, Alan?
Do I believe it?
Yeah, do they believe their God within or not?
Oh, so you're saying they create their reality and create their enslavement?
They
created their enslavement. This is that old discussion we had with Meeple. I think if you keep people ignorant, they're a reflection of your own ignorance. And I think we're here to uplift the planet and not have anyone enslaved. Because those, you may seem like the upper class are enslaving the lower class, but they're just as enslaved, aren't they?
So
how do we shift reality?
But who's to blame? This is what I'm saying. Obama.
You say people create their reality because of the God within, but here we are in a place where we could become more conscious and shift the reality of the planet.
But what's Obama putting on the table? Because that's pretty much what you're spewing out right now.
Well, what is Obama putting on? I think he's putting on, just as an image, a chance of hope. Maybe there's nothing, no substance there. I don't know. I'd like to think there is, but I actually haven't heard anything in the debate. He just seemed like a little smarter.
Yeah,
and
a little
more open.
Molly said it well, more presidential.
I think he appears more presidential. You know, he seems even-handed, you know, cool-headed. He actually takes in what the question is and responds as opposed to reacting. I feel that McCain has a tendency to react to situations.
Yeah, but Paula's question is, what's he putting on the table?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's an attitudinal thing. You know, it's to me.
I agree with Molly there.
How much can we create with attitude? Can we walk on water? Can we heal the blind?
Well, it starts with attitude. You know, Rand
said
attitude is everything. The way you feel about something does change the reality around you.
But how many people are changing by voting for Obama and believing in it?
Well, you don't know yet what the change will be, but it'll obviously be a change. I don't think, even though you don't think George Bush is in control, I think he really drove this country downhill in a major way.
Well, what about
because
9/11?
Of his ignorance.
Alan, what do you think George Bush did during 9/11?
What do I think he did during 9/11?
Yeah. Yeah, what did George Bush do during 9/11?
I mean, besides hide, where I don't know what George Bush did during 9/11. What did he do?
No, I'm asking you.
I don't know what he did. I don't know if he did. He obviously didn't do much or anything.
But even if
he told people to go shopping,
if,
I remember.
If you're
going to
be against George Bush and you say
I'm
that,
I'm not against George Bush. I don't think he was a very competent leader.
Okay, but that's what I'm
Look
saying.
Look at the
how,
economy.
How could he have been more competent during 9/11?
How could he have been more competent? Well,
if
I think
Obama,
it was not during,
Obama,
but I think afterwards.
Well, let me put it this way. I don't think that, you know, when he hears that the towers have been hit, I don't think the presidential thing to do is to continue reading the book because you can't figure out anything
children's
else to
story.
Do.
What do you
yeah.
think Obama would have done?
Well, I think Obama probably would have.
Molly?
I think Obama would have jumped up and stopped reading a children's story. I don't think Obama would have been in that
position. I think he
would
have said, children, I have to deal with something. We'll continue this at another time.
So, Paula, what's your point, Paula?
Then what would he have done?
Paula, who, there was nothing to do after the buildings were hit. I mean, what's your answer, Paula? What do you think?
Okay, here's my answer. I made $5 million because of a binary economic model. There was a little window of opportunity.
It wasn't during 9/11.
Excuse me?
No, I just want to make it clear to the audience that you didn't do that during 9/11. But
no,
go
I
ahead.
Didn't do it during 9/11. I'm just trying to say that it's really nice when you get knowledge that you can take to the bank.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And so what Obama would have done during 9/11, what George Bush did during 9/11, I don't pay much attention to it. To me, it's just a bunch of theater.
Uh-huh.
What I want to know is what happened to your brother after 9/11. He had 50 employees. He had a beautiful office in downtown Manhattan. So did many other people. Why did the economy change so dramatically after 9/11?
Well, why is it changing now so dramatically? Who are pulling the strings now? You can
because
ask the question.
I don't think people are waking up. I think they'd rather be seduced by flowery words than think, what's really happening to my bank account now? What's really paying my rent? What's paying my mortgage, you know, my maintenance, like that? What's really going on here? How can I, as an American, really contribute to the rest of the planet? If I'm listening to corporate media and even left liberal media, like when I was in Kashmir, I heard somebody say, we don't have strong leaders like you do. And all of a sudden, I just shifted massively. No matter how much I hate George Bush, it creates absolutely zero more solidarity with the plight of the Kashmiris. It means nothing. Me hating my president means nothing.
It's not about it meaning anything. It's not about hating. Who's
a
more...
But they do. Liberals hate their government here. They hate
okay,
America.
But who's a more acceptable leader? Who's able to... I mean, I think Roosevelt was able to steer the country in a positive. He may not have accepted the Jews, but I think for the economy, I think he probably... has a, you know, everyone is good and bad. I'm sure George Bush has a few good moments in his career. But, you know, basically, you know, I think there are leaders that, you know, even as just a figurehead, can uplift people.
I think we should go back to the original Constitution. I want to find out from Molly's father, who's descended from two signers of the Declaration of Independence and one of the Constitutions, if he knows anything about the original wording, which was life, liberty, and property, ownership of property, because when Molly said, who cares about Siberia? It's arable land. The U.S. has arable land.
It's, no, Siberia is not arable land.
Excuse me? No, but we have arable land.
I know. But
who holds the deeds? Who owns the deeds now? If you can't pay the mortgage, who owns them? Who owns this country?
China does, basically.
No.
I don't know.
Well, either. Where about all those rich people? What?
Well, Goldman Sachs. I don't know what's going on. That's why I'm saying between the even $700 billion bailout, let's look even beyond that. Who owns the deeds to this country?
Well, no one is telling us. That was my original question about
who's
above the upper class? Who's running those people?
I bet we could find out, Alan. I mean,
I don't think we're the only people asking that question either.
John Klein used to say, if you're not getting the right answers, it's because you're not asking the right questions.
So I want to know who's in connection with the people running the country, running Wall Street.
And if you found out, what would you do with it? Wall Street
well,
is
first,
commissions. Wall
first,
Street is
the truth.
Dang.
first revealing the truth opens people's eyes, and then you gain more power by knowing the truth. That's what you do with it. So they understand who's running, the, you know, increasing the prices or bring down the cost of oil or, you know, selling them mortgages. You know, I think that guy in MNN said it really well, the guy Larry Parks at the cable station said, look at all the money who, look at all the people who made money on these foreclosures. There were people making billions of dollars because people were losing their house. So
they could still be puppets.
Well, I don't think they're puppets with millions of dollars in their pocket.
No, but if somebody, what about if somebody says, here's a hot tip, and you act on the hot tip, but you
didn't understand. Isn't that what you did?
You didn't understand the implications of it.
But that's what you did, Paula.
I don't think so.
You acted on a hot tip, and you built cell towers, and the implications aren't so great if you're living near a cell tower.
But are you saying that I participated somehow in defrauding people of their homes?
No, you were unconscious.
Not of their homes, but you, but Paul, you know, you did take advantage of a situation that was not really public knowledge. It was almost.
And that's okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's okay, Paula. I mean,
I'm not feeling bad about it at all.
I don't think you should feel.
No, I feel it's part of the capital wealth of the country that each citizen is entitled to. I think that more people should do what I did.
Yeah, but how are they going to know?
But don't you think
they're not going to know because they closed up that loophole? It was only a fluke that became apparent.
But once is enough.
If I broadcast it and I keep harping on it and keep telling people, this is about capital ownership. This is not about labor. I've worked like crazy on my YouTube and stuff like that, but it hasn't amounted to anything compared to my apartment in Manhattan.
Yes, but the pursuit of your happiness, Paula, that was what was more fulfilling than all the money you made in cellular towers.
But that's not what I was talking about.
No, but that's what I'm talking about. You may have made a lot of capital gains.
What do you want to talk about?
Well,
you want to talk about happiness?
Well, it's both. It's both. No, it's Paula. It's both. So you didn't make any money on YouTube, but you've got a lot more satisfaction than you did making $5 million.
Yeah, but I get a certain energy from the apartment that then lends itself to the work that I do on YouTube, because I think we are very much connected to our body, and that's where you get into power objects and property. And that's about Tantra, like the sunlight guy saying that the mind leads the body. The Tantra says that the body determines the mind. So if you make a decision to line up with the sun, and your body's stronger, or you do radiation hormesis, and the starvation that our body has for radiation is fulfilled, then you get rid of the fungus, you don't have cancer, and you start feeling blooming health. Then the mind follows along. So who's to say that the mind leads the body? The body can just as much lead the mind.
Well, I agree with all that, of course, and we've discovered lots of great alternatives for many people to try, and that's also part of new realities. But I think it comes down to, in this main discussion, is how do we create the new realities economically and for people across the board? Do we need to, start fresh, start from a whole economic point zero where everyone's on an even balance? What do you think, Molly? How do we create new realities across the board, economically?
Economically?
How do we get out of it? I haven't quite figured that out yet.
That's why I'm stuck.
You're not stuck because of that.
Why do you think I'm stuck? See, I think that actually, I disagree with Paula that you can't eat. I don't think you can eat your way to enlightenment. You know, I think that you've got to clear out the body, you know, I guess that's kind of a shorthand for, you know, even with radiation hormesis and perfectly organic food and, you know, watching the sun every day, I think that you literally have to go in and face your demons. And I think that until you do that and that you have mastery over your mind, that you're never going to do it just through the body.
That's well said, Molly. Thank you.
There's another way. I think in some way, Swami, by having us do practices at midnight and things like that, almost seeming to do everything unhealthy, was a way of approaching that is to maybe to try to accelerate the heartbreak quicker.
Okay, well, all right, perfect example.
That's a whole nother. Go ahead.
You did a million mantras, Paula.
A million repetitions of one, mantra, yes.
Well, did it make any difference?
What do you think I've accomplished? Do you think I've accomplished something or not?
Well, do you think you've accomplished?
No. I'm wondering.
I have enormous reserves. Enormous.
I think you have enormous reserves, but is that because of those a million mantras?
Yeah.
Or did you have it? I think that you had incredible. I wouldn't have like become your first disciple if I didn't think you had something, and that was, you know, before you ever met Swami.
Yeah, I agree with Molly. I think you had it. That's what actually helped you do the million mantras. But
I didn't have the value of heartbreak. I didn't really understand the Afghan war. There was so much I didn't understand that I really had to understand. When I went to India and I stood at Tirupati, when I had the event, when I saw the master behind the idol, and then I instantly connected with all the poor people, or certain ones. There was just a certain number of souls that I knew saw what I saw when I saw it. And those people, I knew that they were transcending this dimension. They were just graduating. And that
right.
I knew I had a breath of a chance to graduate this human experience. And that a lot of the people that we would call desperately poor could be on a soul level so astonishingly advanced, you know, that we could hardly even, you know, even see it, even comprehend it. It's not about what you make, that your stock and your, you know.
No, but that's why I'm curious, you know, but I'm just saying that, you know, I guess I see a lot of people in the ashram and, you know, they do all these
projects. The ashram. Who cares about the ashram? I mean,
all right, well, that's what I want to keep it down to your experience, you know. You started doing the million mantras, and then when you finished, did you notice a difference?
Not instantly, no. But I'm still absolutely astonished at the amount of faith and holding power and stamina that I have to keep going.
I think, doing something like that, Molly, does build up a kind of commitment to a cause. So it may not be the mantras itself, but the fact that she could do it accomplishes, I mean, that sort of, it's like doing your homework in high school as a practice for life, you know?
But in all respect to Molly, in some ways it does ruin you because you've lost your time. You've lost.
But you did. You've gained discipline. And the discipline is maybe what it takes to do the output that you're now doing as far as...
Discipline is important.
What,
yeah.
What were you saying, Molly?
I mean, but there's lots of other ways to achieve discipline without doing a million mantras.
Well,
I mean,
this is one way.
This is why I was hounding you and Alan at the beginning. I know that time you got a black eye when you I was leaning on you is because I was really.
It wasn't from me, Paula. Don't make it unassociated.
No. I fell down. I was pissed off at Paula because she sent me an email and then she sends me this incendiary email. And then jumps offline and disappears to the ashram, and I was so pissed off that I fell down my stairs,
right,
and got a black eye.
No, I'm very aware of it, and I know what was going on. It's like we had just done the yagyas. I paid $25,000 for that. I was, you know, running to the end of my barrel, and I felt if the thing I had done with the Judy Project, I was trying to get something with the NIH. And I was trying to get some seeds sown and something fanned up and blooming. And I had I was working against the clock, and it didn't work. And all I had left was doing mantras. I hated it.
Well, but you did it. You did it, and maybe it did pay off.
You hated doing mantras?
Excuse me?
You hated doing mantras? I thought you loved doing mantras.
You loved it, too. Wait, we're almost there.
I was over there because my money was out, and I was living off what I was renting this apartment for and what it was costing to live in.
All right. We'll have to pick this up soon. Okay, now that everyone knows what our personal lives are all about, I hope we actually left people with something. We could tell people that when your show is on, Paula, your television show?
Every day in Manhattan, MNN.org, 11:30, channel 34.
And Molly, when can we expect your book?
well, God knows. It's been sitting on the agent's desk since the Labor Day, and now that the financial markets are bottoming out, although I do have a new strategy because I'm going to see if I can get him to read it just for some comic relief or you know,
yeah, I like that.
Luckily, when
I like
times
that.
Are bad, people turn to spirituality. So,
right.
You know, as they say, there aren't any atheists in foxholes. But,
like Genesis
says,
when they're knocked off their
well,
feet.
Thank you both. I've been talking to Paula Gloria
and
the Molly Lama.
if you YouTube, if you Google me, Meetings with Remarkable People, you'll find some interesting interviews with some people that I've met over the years.
And I will be in keeping people up on our worldwide adventures as I continue.
You know what?
Thank you.
I totally forgot we were on the air.
We're on the air, and we're getting off the air because they're going to pull us off. But this is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. Email me at newrealities@earthlink. Check my website, newrealities.com. And here's the song of the soul.
That's hilarious.
Can we talk now, or are we still, like, on?
I don't know.
I think we're off air.
You think so?
Are you going from doctor to doctor, spending lots of money, and still not getting results? Would you like to know if you are in the healthy spend zone? Hi, I'm Dr. Richard Needle, PhD nutritionist. Call me any Thursday on Station 1 from 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for a free dowsing reading. Find out if you are really healthy at cell level and how you can reverse and improve multiple health conditions before these conditions are found with medical checkups. I look forward to speaking with you, and thank you.